Are you looking for valuable business advice to reach that seven-figure revenue mark? Do you want actionable tips to properly navigate through every business challenge you encounter along the way? Let Tersh Blissett and Josh Crouch be your guide in getting you to the top here at Service Business Mastery. Tune in as they sit down with world-renowned authors in business, leadership, and personal growth who share valuable insights about management, marketing, pricing, human resources, and so much more. Let their nuggets of wisdom gold guide you in owning a thriving, profitable, and ever-growing business. Here are your hosts, Tersh and Josh.
Welcome back to another episode of the Service Business Mastery Podcast. We are at BDR Spark 2023 in lovely Tucson, Arizona. It's a beautiful day here, 75. So if you're listening to this and it's winter by you, I'm sorry. But we are here with Jeremy Adams of Front Range HVAC out of Denver, Colorado. We're going to talk to him, and he's actually a new member of BDR, and we're going to talk about some things related to that. We'll also talk about some things related to just his journey in the trades. So welcome, Jeremy.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, your journey into the trades, how you got into it.
Yeah, so I was kind of born into it. My grandfather used to own AMS Mechanical out of Denver, and he sold it back in 1996, and I just grew up around it. I always said I was never going to become a tradesman. And
how long did it take for you once you became an adult to become a tradesman?
About 4 years.
Okay. So you dabbled maybe in something else, and you're like, okay.
Yeah, business and firefighting, and just kept coming back to the trades. There's no better way to really grow your career and be able to provide for your family than being a tradesman, in my opinion. So
yeah. So when did you start your business?
I started my business in 2014 with $500 and a big prayer, and I was actually coming from living with my two kids in the streets and sleeping in my car every single night. I got tired of it and started my own thing.
So you started your business while that was happening, or did you start it because of that fact?
I started it towards the latter end of that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. So then I got into some low-income housing, met my wife now, and you know she was able to kind of pull me out of the trenches there and just kept going.
That's really cool.
Yeah. That is really cool.
Yeah.
So you've been going on, what, 9 years?
Yep, 9 years, yep.
Awesome. And what does your company look like as far as, you know, number of employees and things like that?
Yeah, so we're sitting about 45 employees now, and we have service, AOR, electrical division. So,
what pulled you into electrical?
The support that electrical offers for the add-on replacement side of things, and then just the revenue that is sitting there. Denver's big thing is the electrification of Colorado by 2030, and cold climate heat pump is being pushed, you know, pretty heavily. And so there's so much money for electricians to make right now. The service panels and things like that.
Do you have much solar there?
We're starting to.
Yeah.
That's its own game within itself.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird. I find that a lot of companies have HVAC and plumbing. And to me, we were HVAC only at the last company I worked at. I'm like, electrical made the most sense as the next move. We did geothermal. Yeah. We did generators. We always subbed out all the electrical work. Our guys would do most of the electrical work, and it's like, okay, like waiting for the electrician to come here and just kind of like sign off on it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's true. You have to have an electrician to be able to hook up and run your circuits. And I mean, just that IEQ, right? Steam humidification, should always have that 240 double pole just to be able to get the right humidification. In Denver, it's super dry like it is here, so that's, you know, the best way to go. But we were paying contractor. I mean, we were trying to almost pay him $1 million just to come out and do all of our electrical. So
wow. That's kind of a no-brainer there.
Makes sense
there.
To hire somebody.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the amount of work, he had four guys, and he couldn't keep up with us.
So. Oh, wow.
So going into year nine, you went from almost having nothing to 45 employees.
Yeah.
At what point in your journey did things really start to take off and really mesh for you?
Probably year and a half, 2 years in, just started bringing on the right people, I think.
Is that what you attribute the growth to?
Yeah. Yeah, I think just surrounding yourself with people who are
better than
you. How
did you know they were the right people when you were hiring them? Like, sometimes it's easy for us to just kind of fill a seat. Just to fill a seat,
right?
You know,
which I'm guilty of. I've done that.
Yeah.
I think the biggest way that I knew that they were the right people was simply by getting their character, right? Just who they are.
Mm-hmm.
So people that are hungry, that are gonna They want to be able to make an impact in people's lives, which is really
what... Did they already know the trades before then? Or
uh-uh.
did,
okay. No. Actually, the best people that I found are the ones that have zero trades experience.
Really? Yep. How do you know if they're mechanically inclined?
Those are more of your leadership positions.
Okay.
To be able to drive it. I don't want my best installer being the best install manager because,
oh, right. yeah.
you know, they're not good. Most of the time, the tradesmen aren't the best leaders.
Yeah.
Well, we literally just talked about that with the guy that was sitting here while you were waiting for us. We were talking about that because that happens a lot.
Right.
Your best producer, your best installer, your best CSR becomes the manager of that department, and all of a sudden you realize that they suck at management.
Yeah.
And now what do you do?
Right.
Now you lost your best producer, and now you have to try to fix this.
If you demote them, they quit. Typically,
they're gonna be like, I'm gone.
Yeah, or reappropriate them to a different department. You know, that usually doesn't work, especially because they'll consider it as a demotion or not be humbled by that experience, you know. So I think at the end of the day, there's not a secret formula to it. Just really building that relationship with those people and understanding where do they want to go. And the common denominator that I see with all of our leadership team is that they want to be able to make an impact in people's lives. Right. Yeah. So they care about their people. They care about their surroundings and they want to be able to impact people's lives.
So let me ask you this. Who was your first hire outside of just you being in the van doing everything?
My very first one that's still with me.
Well, just your first hire.
My very first hire was another technician.
Okay.
If I could go back, my first hire would have been a controller.
You know, you're not the first person that said that. But being in that position, can you imagine hiring a controller when you don't have another technician?
Like, no.
I mean, right?
I think often it's easy for you to, I can get the jobs done. I can get the leads coming in. I can get the sales. I can get the work. That's not the problem. And then the finances usually always get pushed to the wayside.
Yeah.
And one thing that contractors do not understand is the mom and pop shops, right? The ones that are going to go underbid everybody because they were the best technician and, you know, they can do it better, right? And those are the guys that are, in my opinion, are really putting a hindrance in our trades, bringing it down. Because at the end of the day, if you bring in $100 and you have a 15% overhead on cost of goods sold, you only brought in 85%. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? So your break even's not $100 or what that 15% is, it's more. And people don't understand that. So trying to figure out where that break even point and you're always chasing the cash flow. And I think that took me until about year 4 or 5 before I even understood it.
So is that about the time when you hired a controller?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. About year 4.
Yeah.
And then having the right controller. I mean, I've had to go through a couple of them where I think we have a really solid one now. She's meshes with our culture and she does a great job.
I think that's the challenge because people don't know. I wouldn't say it's easy to hire a technician, but sometimes it feels easier to hire a technician because you know what...
You know what you're looking for.
Yeah,
because you can use your experience as a guide versus a controller. You're like, I don't really know what a controller does.
Yeah. I think that balance sheet looks right.
Right. Yeah, just totally backwards.
Who do I check this against?
Yeah, so. Just playing magic numbers. No, but I mean, at the end of the day, with a technician, though, they could go to a job and say, hey... And I'll come back on Saturday and I'll do this for $500 where the company, you know, I'm working for is going to make me charge you $1,000.
True.
I've had that. And so how do you create checks and balances in place to make sure you're okay, right? So now I have a third party, I have a CPA who's also looking at it. I have separate meetings and I have to educate myself as the owner to make sure I protect myself from the controller.
Yeah.
Not that there's, you know.
Well, I've heard that story a ton. I'm sure Church has heard it a ton where you have someone that handles the money and then all of a sudden they're siphoning money off. Yep. Somewhere that you don't realize until you're 2-3 years down the line, and all of a sudden it's 40, 50, 60 grand or more that has been missing.
Yep. I had it happen to me, and with technicians, I mean, you name it.
So tell me about, you mentioned the technician doing the side work for your customer. They're basically stealing from you because they've stolen a customer and all that marketing expense that they didn't have to do. You spend all the marketing dollars and the reputation behind it. That's why they called you originally.
Yep.
How do you prevent that from happening again?
Yeah, so we've put a lot of, I think, best practices in place, and I'm always trying to be a sponge and learn more. But, you know, following up, doing happy checks from our CSRs, they're calling the day after, and then getting the respective managers for each department following up with those homeowners if they didn't leave us a review, you know, trying to engage. A lot of times the homeowners, they wouldn't feel comfortable with that type of thought process, you know what I mean? So I would say, you know, 8-9 times out of 10, the client wouldn't want that. It's just how the technician presented it was, hey, I'll come back on Saturday and do this. but I'll do it for $500.
Yeah.
And so the homeowner doesn't click, well, you're coming back as Front Range. You're coming back as ABC Heating or whatever, you know, and the homeowner doesn't entirely understand it. So now you start doing those things, and then the homeowener will tell you, well, you guys are coming back on Saturday.
Like, and then you go look at the schedule no, we're not.
Yeah, you know.
Have you called anybody in the action since implementing that?
I have, actually.
Yeah. That's tough. So how do you have that conversation? Do you just instantly fire them? It's like a non-negotiable?
Or? Me, personally, realized I didn't have a pulse on that guy. Like I told you, my background.
Yeah.
I went through a really rough time, and I had full custody of my kids and my two oldest boys. And I don't know where they're at, right? So I actually pulled that guy in while I back up first. I went to the call on Saturday at noon.
Oh, geez.
And, that's awkward. You know, he's sitting there. He's in my truck. So we have tracking stuff on my truck now. And
did you before did he use?
No, okay, no, but now I do. But showed up there, and he about crapped himself. And we finished the job and just talked to him about where he was at. He was in a pretty bad financial situation, and his checks were getting garnished. I knew his checks were getting garnished, but at the same time, I was paying him really good money. And you know, he just didn't manage his money well. So when I was able to actually sit down, formulate a plan, and really mentor and develop him, you know, now he still works for me.
Now, is it our responsibility as a business owner to make sure that they are financially responsible?
I believe you have the key to their success in some level. And I think we're ultimately responsible to leading and developing them. As a business owner and as a leader, we're not managers, right?
Yeah.
We don't manage people, but what we do is we can lead them. And so I believe that it's our responsibility to help them. Now, what they decide to do on their own time is you can only go so far. So I have had to get rid of people where, you know, try to give them like Dave Ramsey's type of tools or sit down and create a budget with them. And if they just have bad practices and they're doing stuff that's irresponsible on the weekends or whatever, I mean, that's ultimately on them, but that's going to go through and through with, you know, their entire demeanor at work. And
yeah,
I mean, that's going to all pour out, right? So those are ultimately negative people that you don't want to keep around.
Mm-hmm. So as an experience when you showed up on Saturday and you had that conversation, did that kind of did something like a light bulb go off in your mind of different leadership and development trains that you can have for your company that might be able to
that
help?
That takes a lot of nerve on your behalf to not just go there and just be
I don't know a lot of people that would have been like like guns ablazing.
Very calm.
Like, you know, it would have been like a heated moment and who knows what would have happened when tempers flare. But
yeah, so I'm not going to lie. I had two or three days to calm down and like driving there,
probably
my heart's racing. And
that you did get to calm down and not be the next day or something.
You know, talking to yourself. You know, we all do that. You're driving, you think you're crazy and you're MF and everything on the way over there. But when I looked at his face and he was just, all right, let's do this together, you know, and I don't know. At the end of the day, I was able to help him out and retain the client. And I mean, the guy still works for me. So
that says a lot.
Yeah.
Has it helped you? So that mentality or that experience, has that helped you with other experiences, like thinking back on that and how you handled that? Has it helped you in other circumstances, especially with, I mean, 45 employees, there's stuff that's going to happen.
Yeah.
People are messy. You can't have necessarily your hand on 45 pulses.
Yeah. No, so in firefighting, we talked about the ICS incident command structure and how we manage incidences. And one of the things that I think we do a really good job at is trying to empower each leader. And so we could do better. I think we could do a better job at executing all the way through.
Yeah.
But taking my install manager and saying, all right, here's your people, but your span of control, you start losing it after 7 to 10. If you're beyond 7 to 10, they say in an emergency system, you're 4 to 6 or whatever, right?
Uh-huh.
But 7 to 10 for non-emergencies type of dynamic situations, we can handle those people effectively. So I can manage 7 to 10 people below me and really have a pulse on them and show them how to have a pulse on their people below them. And that's really where I could do better, you know what I mean? And so I think that's one of my biggest takeaways just from this weekend so far is making sure that I'm meeting with them more consistently and not just, this is what I need you to do, but more, hey, where are you at? What do you need from me?
Oh, yeah. That's tough for an employee to tell you because they have to really trust you in order to be vulnerable and say, look, I need X, Y, and Z. I mean, we all have that, or we've had that employee that they will speak their mind no matter what, and even in the most inconsiderate and inopportune times, they will do it.
Yeah.
But there's others who are just like, look, I'll just do my thing and get my check and go to the house, and if another opportunity comes along, then another opportunity comes along, and I'll take that opportunity and never voice my opinion.
And you're always going to have those, but then I can guarantee you, if you were to ask them, hey, who's the most influential person that you've ever had in your life, and they'll tell you, it's my dad or my grandpa or my grandma or my mom or, you know, whoever, Billy Bob, that used to be my supervisor. But how do you try to position yourself to where you are one of those most influential people in their life?
How do you do that, though?
Just by building a relationship.
Yeah.
So knowing who they are. How do you know their family? Do you know what they like to do for fun? How was their weekend?
Yeah.
You know, when I come in the morning, it's more my first hour. I just walk around, talk to everybody. Hey, how are you? How was your weekend? How was your night? What did you guys do last night? Did you have fun? How are the kids? How's Sally?
How do you transition that from superficial talk to genuine talk? Because you know that you have that superficial chit chat, like, oh, how are you doing? Things are great. Like,
how do you get below the surface? You know? Like, my weekend was good.
Yeah.
Like, stops there, and it's like, oh, cool. That's cool. Like,
I think just asking more probing questions, right? So like, that's not a superficial conversation for me.
Okay.
And I think people beginning are. At the very beginning, they're like, oh, fine. I had one lady when she first started, like, that was a response. And then she heard me in the hallway, like, sitting there talking to somebody for 15 minutes about how their kid decided to go get drunk, and they were trying to deal with that, you know, or whatever, teenager getting in trouble or whatever.
Yeah.
And so just trying to navigate her, hey, do you need something from me? Do you need to leave early? You know, like, genuinely being concerned for that person and, you know, their family. I always tell them that if it wasn't for my wife, they all know my story, but if it wasn't for my wife and her being able to take care of the family and the kids, I have four boys and one girl now, and if she didn't take care of that at home, nobody would be here.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't be able to handle myself. I know that, right? So I just need to know my home life is cool and that that's all secured and that's safe, that's good. And so I believe the same is important for everybody else.
Has your wife ever been involved in the business?
No, not really.
No.
Yeah, no, I don't think she wants to.
Yeah, I get it.
Honestly, so my aunt and uncle owns an HVAC company in Denver as well, and I used to work for him. And like I said, my grandfather had his own company, and the family was always involved, and that was messy. I mean, it gets bad.
It would take the right family dynamic, like the right people to distance it. I find a lot of times they can't.
Yeah.
They can't turn the switch off when they go home for the day or it's the weekend. It's like, well, they took the argument at work and now it's an argument at home.
Oh, yeah. 100%. I couldn't imagine that because you have to have that work-life balance. I try to encourage our guys. I was just talking to my install manager. I said, hey, let's be consistently getting into the office on times. That way we're setting the tone for, you know, our crews. And I told him, I said, but that doesn't mean you should work until 7, 8 o'clock tonight or 4 o'clock tonight. Like, work your 8 hours.
Yeah.
And then pass the baton to me if, hey, I still have Billy and Joe and Sally in the field. You know, can you help me with this? Like, pass that baton back to me. Give me a status report. We talked about it in firefighting, a CAN report, conditions, actions, needs, right? So here's what I'm dealing with. This is what I've done, and this is what I need, you know? And so we always do those check-ins periodically throughout the day, and then that helps me understand what I need to do. Do I need to adjust, you know, our schedules? Do we need to bring on more people? Like, what do we need to do? Do we need to focus more on training? Things like that.
Yeah, you brought up firefighting several times. You feel like your experience, and I guess we didn't really talk about that off air. We talked, and
yeah,
you've been firefighting for 20 years. You feel like some of the things that you bring into your business are from what you've learned through your time there.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I think the biggest thing, if you can take, you know, an emergency dynamic situation where lives are at stake and we can instantaneously cross-functionally create systems where interdepartments can communicate. I've never worked with this guy before. I've never seen him before. And all of a sudden he can come in and we can communicate the same language and accomplish the same task. There's always opportunities throughout. Then if I actually work side by side with this person every day, I'm developing them, they're developing me. Like, I have something that I learn every single day from these people. Then I'm able to build that system, right? It's just very military. But at the same time, it's not the old school management where you're going to go do this and go do this now. I mean, that is exactly what's happening in a firefighting scenario or whatever, or an emergency situation. So we're not doing that, you know, but the leadership side of how we're structuring the organization, you know, there's plenty of companies I go to where they have 20 people under them. You can't manage that many people, back to your point. Yeah, I can't have my hand in every single thing. And quite frankly, I don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, you know, I have leaders that want me more involved or they're scared to make a decision, but I got to continue to empower them.
Yeah, that's tough too, because I've had a manager before where they would constantly come to me, and it was almost like
it was almost more work to probably have the manager.
It was very much. It was very exhausting. But I was like, if I'm going to make all the decisions, why do I have you to do this work? But I knew what it was. If they made a mistake, they didn't want to be the blame, because if it was my decision and it didn't work out, then it's me to blame, not them. And I feel like that was a part of that empowerment.
Yep. What I always tell everybody is, if you made a decision and you stick by that decision, you're able to tell me why you did it. Mm-hmm. Right, wrong, or indifferent, but you're able to explain to me why you did that, great. Like, that's fine. And if I absolutely disagree with you, you're not going to be in trouble. So one of the things I started doing, because I used to just answer the questions. Right. And it's really true for new service technicians. They're like, I think this is my diagnostics, and I'm not sure, right? Or an installer, well, I think I need to move the furnace over 6 inches. Well, yeah, I mean, based upon what you're telling me, you should probably do that. Good job. right? But it's just asking them questions, right? So they're asking you questions. And actually, I've had people sit here and say, I'm calling you for an answer. Why are you asking me a question?
Yeah.
Because I want you to come up with the answer.
So I did this several years back, and it was probably 2014, 2015. I had a business. I started one of my businesses, and I literally had 135 phone calls in one day. And it was just technicians calling me, asking me the most ridiculous questions. And I implemented a new process that if they asked me a question, they also had to give me 3 options as well. So 3 legitimate answers. That way I know they put forth a little bit of effort in that thought process. And then we can work through it together at that point.
Yep.
Instantly, overnight, the phone calls dropped to like 3 or 4 a day.
Yeah.
And I picked up the phone and said, all right, well, what's the 3 solutions that you have? Well, I don't have any. Click.
Yep.
And then they call me back. I think we got disconnected. You're right. We did. Click.
Yep. Yep. No, I've done something very similar to that. And the other side of that too is just, how do you set them up for success for the day?
Yeah.
Logistically and physically, right? So number one, are they seeing that job first thing in the morning, right? Are you walking through making sure that they have the right parts? And then giving them the accountability instead of, oh, the warehouse didn't give me the parts, or the install manager didn't give me these parts, or sales screwed this up and didn't see X, Y, and Z. Well, you reviewed that job.
Right, right.
And you had your parts form request, you know, and we looked through everything. Mm-hmm. Like, it was in the video. It was in the notes.
So
it was written
down.
So you
have your sales team creating videos after each sales.
Yeah, we have an engineering form actually straight from Top Gun Sales Excellence from BDR. We have an engineering form that we run through. I've added to it over the years. And we do pictures, videos. The sales has a whole checklist that they have to get everything, all the information, attic insulation depth, attic access opening, even if we're not going up into the attic, multitude of different things there. And it just allows us to make sure no matter what we're doing, we can continue to offer solutions. So my big thing is, if we sold a whole system and we're not there for the water heater, you're still getting information on the water heater.
Right, right.
Because I want to sell that water heater in 5 years and never go back to that house.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, exactly. Or I want my install team to offer it again, right, and try to get a conversion rate during the install, which, I mean, we do a lot of that. But
do you have installers that actually present a conversion?
We're starting to get there, yeah.
Yeah,
so if I can get the installers to see that that pressure-reducing valve in the house is bad, we don't have the right water pressure, let's sell it. Bad water heater, it's about to blow out the bottom, and the sales guy just never saw it. Or they presented it and the homeowner declined it. Now we can tell them, all right, well, sign here because you're going to flood your basement.
Yeah.
You know, and people
you're
usually.
You're liable, not me.
Yeah, exactly. And they can't come back and say, well, you guys never told me. You know, you're the professionals.
Well, this is the second person that told you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So you've been, and again, know this from before this episode, but you've been in the BDR ecosystem for a long time, taking a lot of classes and things like that, but you just recently signed up within the last month or two. What made you take that jump and realize you want like more of a full-time coaching organization?
Yeah, so we just signed up for the Profit Coach program, which I believe is probably one of the best things we ever did. I wish I would have done that 9 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Along with the controller. Reason for that is, as we continue to grow, back to what you were saying, I can't have my hand in every single thing, right?
Yeah.
And now I can be more strategic working on my business instead of in it. And I have other people who, you know, head coach for this manager, coach for this manager, and then I have my own head coach. And it just allows me to be more strategic, really. And I believe every day is a school day, right? And you always have to have that student-like mentality and just be a sponge. And so if there's anything I can learn from our managers or these coaches, I think it's worth it. The program's not cheap, but it's going to pay for itself tenfold if we just execute on an IEQ program or
implementation.
Implementation of some of these things that, you know, I'm going to get that support from these other coaches.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Do you feel like it brings some clarity for you, like doing the profit launch and like seeing not only where you were last year, but seeing what the future should look like, at least having a plan for the future? It helps you make decisions more quickly.
Yeah, 100%. You're not reactive to situations, you're proactive, right? And then an influencer within the marketplace, right? So trying to, you know, help change some of those things, right? Like getting that average ticket up and not having that thought process, oh, we're ripping them off. You know, I can't believe they're charging $16,000 for that system. You're like, I can't believe we didn't charge $20,000.
Right.
You know? So, I mean, it's okay to charge more.
Yeah.
So,
absolutely. As long as you're providing that value.
Yeah, 100%. And explanation to it, you know. Yeah. So, yeah, absolutely. Awesome.
Jeremy, we really appreciate you hanging out with us and sharing your story with us. It's a massive story, and we could keep going on for hours, obviously. But is there anything, as we're closing up, any closing remarks that you want to make or anything like that?
No, I appreciate you having me here, and I'd encourage any contractor to reach out to BDR. And I'm not just blowing smoke. I didn't get paid for that. It's invaluable resources, and don't be scared to charge more money.
Right, right.
No, I appreciate that, Jeremy.
Before we go, I want to give a huge shout out to the people who make this podcast possible. We have, you probably can't see it in this particular video, but we will definitely share links to Sarah, UpFrog, Company Cam, and Relentless Digital. And Service Emperor, Relentless Digital and Service Emperor allow us to be here, Josh and I, to be here while those businesses are still running. And the other partners really make trips like this possible and really help us so that we can share the message with the masses. So if you have any questions about any of those sponsors, please don't hesitate to reach out to us. If you have any questions about anything that Jeremy said, don't hesitate to reach out to us, podcast@servicebusinessmastery.com. With that being said, I hope you have a wonderful and safe day. Until we talk again next time, we'll see you later.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Service Business Mastery. Now that you are equipped with essential business advice from this impactful conversation, you are one step closer to becoming the successful owner of your dreams. If this episode has been helpful to your business journey, don't forget to subscribe to the show, leave a rating, and share it with other owners as well. Visit servicebusinessmastery.com to learn more.